This is the Norris Group's Real Estate Investor Radio Show, the award-winning show dedicated to thought leaders shaping the real estate industry and local experts revealing their insider tips to succeed in an ever-changing real estate market. Hosted by author, investor, and hard money lender, Bruce Norris.
The Norris Group proudly presents our 16th annual award-winning event, I Survived Real Estate. Industry experts join Bruce Norris to discuss evolving industry trends, real estate bubbles, inflation, and opportunities emerging for real estate professionals. All proceeds from the event benefit Make-A-Wish and St. Jude Children's Research Hospital. We want to thank our platinum partners, Inland Empire Real Estate Investment Club, San Diego Creative Investors Association, White Feather Investments, Wilson Investment Properties, UDirect IRA Services, MVT Productions, and Realty 411 Magazine.
We started in 2008, which is why we use the term I Survived. Not very many people were doing very well. All right, goodness gracious. I don't want to leave early, so let's see what we got. All right. Okay, I think I'm going to circle back around to something that's, I think, important to all of us. And maybe that's first is talking about inflation. So let's talk about that, because there's, in my mind, I'm not an economist. So what are the elements of inflation, I guess? Let's cover that. And what seems to be headed in the right direction to have a recession? I guess maybe, Doug, can you touch on that? Because
the textbook definition of inflation is the rate of change in the general price level. So there's a little bit of a misperception today about the level of prices versus the change in the level of those prices. So that has slowed down significantly.
Right.
At its peak, it was about 9%. Right now, it's around 4% on a year-over-year basis. The core inflation is actually increasing just slightly faster than headline inflation, because food and energy have come down somewhat. So headline is a little less than core. Core includes housing, and that's one of the things that the Fed is watching. There was some expectation, which both panels have touched on, about the lack of a direct connection between interest rates and prices, because there was a sense that prices would fall, and they did for one quarter. The third quarter of 2022, prices nationally fell. The Fed kind of was queuing off that and expecting the continuation of the decline in rents, which is really the component that
right.
is. But house price gets involved because of looking at what rent you would have to pay in order to occupy the house that you own. That's called owner's equivalent rent.
Right.
So when house prices start going up again, which our estimate is when the full year of 2023 is in, house prices nationally will have risen 6.7%, which was certainly not the forecasts a year ago.
Is there a lag in?
There is a lag.
Okay.
And it's because leases are signed basically 1 year. They're renewed like on an annual basis, so they get renewed over time to adjust for the rise in rents.
And how big of a factor is what people make? Because, you know, you're hearing, like UPS, I don't even know that they went to strike, right? They just settled. And I think there was another union that was about to do the same thing. So
That goes back to that. Let me tell you about the Uber driver that drove Lana and I to the airport, and he was complaining about inflation. And I said, so explain that to me. And what he meant was that prices had gone up by 9%, and had not come down, but his wages had not gone up similarly. That's really what he was talking about.
So, okay, but let's map that out. How would that react? One of the charts that I put together that surprised me, because wages doubled in the 70s. And so there were, I was lucky enough that this one report from Cal Poly Pomona broke down the cost of the same house for 10 years in a row. So it was labor and parts, same house for 10 years. So the plumber that was making $5 an hour was making $10 at the end of the decade. But what was also interesting is what could he buy percentage-wise of what he could afford in 1970? It was 78%. So his wages doubled and he lost 22% of his buying power. So I'm trying to get my arms around, everybody's getting a raise that's not buying more stuff. Is that still marked as inflationary, or is that deflationary?
Let me answer it in a different way. As I'll send you my favorite chart.
Good.
I call it the barbed wire chart. I grew up in a dairy farm, and putting up barbed wire is no picnic. real simple logic, and it's very predictive. If you chart on the vertical axis the median house price relative to median household income, so what you're saying is somebody with a certain level of income can roughly afford a certain price, but that's adjusted according to what interest rates are if they have to borrow money. So the higher interest rates are, the less price they can afford relative to their income. And so what you see is that's very predictable. In terms of econometrics, the regression equation on that is almost perfect. Until the bubble, when we eased underwriting criteria and lent people money, giving them 30 years to pay back when they didn't have an income. Didn't work that well. You can see it go way off the predictive line. Then we saw the bust. It went way below the predictive line. And then for 4 years, from 2015 to 2019, it was exactly back on that line.
Okay.
Then the pandemic hit. Now it's way above.
Okay. Now it's way above to the equivalent of 2006.
Right.
Correct?
Yeah.
Okay.
So what brings it down is the question.
Yeah, that is the question. Yeah. Because in 2007 and 8, you had a crash that prices went down by 50%. But as we're seeing, we got nothing for sale.
Correct.
So that's going to be a pretty stable, ridiculous number. So if you look at that chart over 50 years, you've only visited that peak at crazy times. And crazy times are seemingly to continue because of the math, there's nothing for sale. So is that going to keep inflation higher than normal? I guess is that going to be normal?
It won't keep inflation higher than normal, but prices will stay up there. Remember,
right.
Inflation is the rate of change in the price level. So we're just talking about prices went way up and they're not coming back down. So they're likely to flatten at some point. Although, we'll ask Craig, if mortgage rates come down to 5.5, will you see more action?
I get to build them fast enough. Yeah.
Right. So we're going to get back into the same problem that we have demographics pushing harder than supply, and you'll probably see price appreciation. So that will work its way back into the inflation measure, which is one of the reasons Powell is saying higher for longer.
Okay. One of the things that happened when interest rates doubled from 74 to 80, and you got to that number you're talking about in 1980, it was pretty equivalent to 06, not quite as bad, and in 2022. That number was reached after interest rates had doubled. We reached that same percent or higher when interest rates went up in 5 months? We got there. So we really didn't even use up our interest rate hike, and we were already there. So in a way that was safer, because if you think about, there was very few people that got into the market at the completely absurd multiple times their income. They didn't have a chance to do it. You know, there was very few of the people, if they were cash buyers, they didn't do it. And if they were borrowing buyers, there were just so few people that got pegged at that number. So that's probably safer for the market as well. What about components now that we're having to look at? So thinking about inflation, the debt levels that we have. So we've got 35 trillion dollars. How is that financed, and for how long is it fixed? So it, maybe at some point it was a deal. You know, are you allowed to borrow 30-year deal money, or is that like that doesn't work in that world? And is that about to adjust to a very crazy number?
I'm sorry, you're talking about the federal debt?
Yeah, federal debt, yeah. Just if that's going to go out of whack.
Well, that's the chart I show before drinks are served. one decision that you have to make about why interest rates have gone where they are, other than the Fed was tightening monetary policy, the last 6 weeks or so are, I think, a separate event. And they're either that fixed income investors who would buy treasuries have decided that growth is going to be sustainably stronger so that the Fed will continue to push on rates, or the size of the debt that has to be financed is so massive that they're going to require more yield in order to make that investment. You have to make that decision if you're going to forecast today. We're more on the latter side. Because I think if we're spending the same amount of money on paying interest on that debt as we are spending on the Defense Department, that's a misallocation of resources.
So what is our negative per year now? Is it going to go be $2 trillion of debt growth? Okay. I guess we're going to get to that $40 trillion cover pretty soon, unfortunately. What about war? You know, just the uncertainty. You watch TV. I'm just curious. How does that play into interest rates or inflation and debt, I guess? Anybody?
You're all looking down.
Yeah. Yeah. Well,
we had this conversation. We had this conversation at lunch, yeah. And we said we were going to ask you.
So. I picked a. It was a bad selection of microphones, is what it was. Well, there's multiple effects. One of the effects is when defense spending picks up, it directly grows GDP. So one of the reasons GDP has picked up is we spent $118 billion so far on Ukraine. Now that we have Gaza also on the plate, and of course that raises the probabilities China will be thinking about Taiwan. So you have people who don't like the United States considering whether or not we could support three fronts on war. And there's different ways to execute on that. It can be significantly inflationary. So if you looked at World War II, there was an agreement between the Treasury Department and the Fed that the Treasury would monetize that debt. That's certainly one possibility that could happen in this instance as well. And that keeps it from being inflationary. So they just continue to expand the balance sheet.
And we're at 130%, 137% debt to GDP. We're the world's reserve currency. Japan's at almost 300. If they can get to 300 as the world's reserve currency, we should be able to get pretty far, assuming we don't have some major misstep. So everybody keeps thinking about this as like a next year event. I think it's you know, if we stay on this path, then we don't get a good, you know, fiscal policy at some point. If we don't start electing people with brains, we're going to be in trouble. But it's not tomorrow.
Yeah, that's right.
Ray Dalio, have you read what he's written as far as that type of thing? Okay. So that's, he looked at a 500-year chart of countries, which is crazy, right? I mean, I feel like I've got 50 years of real estate down, and he's looking at 500 years of world history.
Well, he wasn't there for the whole thing.
Are you sure?
But one of the things that he's certain of because of history is that whoever has the reserve currency loses it. And also, he was concerned that when you get into this stage of all of his stages. I think this is stage five, that the chance of war becomes increasing. And I just saw a quote from him. He thought there was chance of a world war at 50%, which is crazy. But, you know, I don't like watching TV right now either. So I guess...
The reserve currency is an exorbitant privilege. It's what makes people around the globe buy our debt, is that fact. And it is one of the three strategic objectives of China to replace the dollar with the yuan. And it's a rational strategic objective.
Doesn't that include trust, though?
It does. It's why the arrangement that the Chinese, the Russians, Brazil, I forget the other country, they've talked about trying to create a competitive currency against the dollar. What do you think about the stability of contracts in those countries? One of the things that the United States has is contract law and courts that enforce them. That's a place where private investment takes place.
So when you look out, and I'm sorry, I keep on directing. I'm not trying to, please, anybody opinion. What do you think, how long away are we from a recession? And when we get a recession, that usually has the Fed doing a much different policy. So I'm just curious, do you think that's 6 months away? And what would drive that? I hate the time. Do you think that's within a year? Let's put it that way.
Well, there's three rules to forecasting. If you give a number, don't give a date. If you give a date, don't give a number. And if you get it right, don't look surprised. My forecast is public, and I have a mild recession beginning in the first half of next year.
Okay, so let's say that that's accurate. So you have a recession. What does that do, let's say, to Fed fund rate, and what would that probably do to mortgage rates? Just approximate.
I will assume that if the recession occurs, the Fed will achieve its 2% target, so rates will come down. But I would say when Powell says higher for longer, there's two ways to interpret that. One is that they're going to stay with the Fed funds target where it is today for a longer time period, or when a recession occurs, if it's not catastrophic, they will lower rates more slowly than they have lowered them in the past.
Okay. Okay. Because usually they are pretty aggressive.
Right.
Okay. So this...
But, you know, a recession is a pretty big range of things,
sure,
right?
We've sure.
had plenty of recessions that most people don't feel
right.
at all. We do have the fastest GDP growth of any country in the world right now, which seems really surprising for, you know, everybody saying all this, you know, there's all this economic trouble.
Yeah, that's why I'm actually surprised that I can't say I'm happy to hear it, but of course, interest rate wise, I am. But didn't we just come up with a 4.8?
Nine.
Or nine, yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, and like, when was the last time we were growing faster than China? I mean, it's been a long time. Yeah. So,
yeah.
I mean, I think that, I don't know how big, you know, is there a depth to your reception or anything?
Yeah,
recession?
About a quarter of a percent of GDP. It's mild.
So,
unemployment
at a quarter
doesn't
percent,
get to 5%.
Like, I don't know that we feel that.
Yeah. Well, we're already feeling it in housing, right?
Yes.
Right.
Okay.
Very fair. Like, we definitely have a recession in housing, right? If you're a mortgage,
yeah, if you're a mortgage
realtor, et cetera,
yeah.
like, it feels pretty bad, but
sure.
you got to look at the bigger picture still.
Well, you know, that's what happened in, say, 2021, and you brought it forward, right? So everybody got a refi. If you're in the refi business, you got three from you.
Right.
Yeah, so, you know, you were doing crazy things and all the buying and selling of houses, but okay. I always like to look at categories that didn't exist before, because we've got three that really can affect the market that we didn't have. So in 2006, when prices crashed 2 years later, it kind of created niches that didn't exist before that are kind of substantial. So Airbnb is one of them. So you got a lot of properties that are in that container, if you will. So if you have unemployment or if you have a recession, how solid is that group? Is you think that's anybody, but it seems like that's going to stay there. You've got the new build-to-rent model, and now that may not be building like crazy right now because of the rates, but those houses exist already, and they're not on the market for sale. So whatever the building numbers were, like the 1.1 or 2 million, a lot of those never were up for sale. They just were, okay, let's hold those things. And if you're in the buy-sell business, all of a sudden you're competing against somebody that wants to hold 10,000 houses, right, as rentals. We didn't have either of these categories before. And now we've got all three, and they all came about at the end of a boom cycle that turned into a bargain. So I guess I'm just wondering, do you see any big piles of inventory coming from either of those piles? Will it change habits of the market?
I mean, the build-to-rent's, you know, an institutional play to say that they, you know, that money's better deployed in housing because of the lack of supply and some of the things that we've talked about than in other markets. So I think that's pretty bullish for housing, and I don't see that trade reversing itself. That was a long-term trade, long-term plan. You know, we have some customers that have been in that space, and you know, it's a very long-term view. I don't see a pile of inventory coming from there. You definitely see short-term rental folks that kind of got all in and got way over their skis, didn't know what they're doing, and I think some of those have come to market, but that's easily absorbed. Mm-hmm. So, no, I don't. I mean, that's the big question, like, where does the downturn come from, right? So we had the builders was one time, right? We had the trustee sales. They've changed that policy. That's not going to happen again.
Right.
So where is that motivated seller that's going to show up and impact prices? That's what I'm looking for.
Yeah.
And I don't see it.
Well,
Bruce, in that aspect of, like, the Airbnb and the short-term stuff, just today I saw three different large industry titans coming out and talking about the aspect of travel. And from the aspect of pre-COVID, that they all said that on their balance sheets and what they're seeing is they all said officially that per their business model, most of these were airlines, hotel, you know, people, that travel is back. So again, when you start looking at a short-term Airbnb, you know, I've got a friend that manages some Airbnbs, 1,300 units in Airbnb. And he says that in the last 4 months, he's seen his Airbnb stuff picking up dramatically, again, because that travel aspect is finally back to where people feel like they're traveling, which is kind of interesting when we're saying our buying power feels less right now, you know, because of where things are at, but yet somehow people are still traveling.
See iSurvivedRealEstate.com for event details, information on all our generous sponsors, and to connect with our speakers. We'd also like to thank our gold sponsors, Chase Leland Photography, Fair Trade Real Estate, Inland Valley Association of Realtors, Keystone CPA, Lavis Tax Wealth Management, NorCal REA, NSDREI, Pasadena Phoebe, Property Radar, The Outspoken Investor, Tony Alvarez, White House Catering, Windermere Tower Realty, Rick and Leanne Rossiter. See iSurvivedRealEstate.com for event details.
For more information on hard money loans and upcoming events with the Norris Group, check out thenorrisgroup.com. For information on passive investing with trust deeds, visit tngtrustdeeds.com.
The Norris Group originates and services loans in California and Florida under California DRE License 01219911, Florida Mortgage Lender License 1577, and NMLS License 1623669. For more information on hard money lending, go to thenorrisgroup.com and click the Hard Money tab.